Today we're going to discuss the story of the four captives, fact or fiction. Sefer HaKabbalah, which is a historical account of Islamic Spain written by Ibn Daud in 1160 to 1161, describes the famous story of the four captives who founded the spiritual centers of Spain, North Africa, and Egypt. And if you read the beginning of this account, he says, prior to that, it was brought about by the Lord that the income of the academies which used to come from Spain, the land of the Maghreb, Ifriqiya, Egypt, and the Holy Land was discontinued. The following were the circumstances that brought this about. So in other words, the purpose of this account is to explain why the Spanish, African, Egyptian, and communities of Eretz Yisrael are no longer financially supporting the yeshivos in Bavel. The commander of a fleet, whose name was Ibn Rumahis, left Cordova, having been sent by the Muslim king of Spain, Abd al-Rahman al-Nasir. The commander of a mighty fleet set out to capture the ships of the Christians and the towns that were close to the coast. So you have this pirate ship that was sent by the Muslim caliph of Spain. In any case, they sailed as far as the coast of Palestine and swung about to the Greek seas and islands therein. Here they encountered a ship carrying four great scholars who were traveling from the city of Bari to a city called Sephastin. So Bari is a city in Italy. And you have this ship had four great scholars, and they were on their way to a Kala convention. It seems that these scholars were sent by the yeshiva of Sura and Bavel as emissaries to the Jews of Europe to raise money for the support of the school, like Yarche Kala. The Kala refers to the yeshiva. Some scholars say refers to the wedding, but that seems to be far-fetched. They're collecting money for their yeshiva. Anyway, Ibn Rumahis captured the ship and took the sages prisoner. One of them was Rabbi Chushil, the father of Rabbeinu Hananel. Again, those of us who study the Gemara with Rishonim and the Mefarshim on the page know Rabbeinu Hananel is in the commentary on the Gemara. Again, another was Rabbi Moshe, the father of Rabbi Chanoch, who was taken prisoner with his wife and his son, Rabbi Chanoch, who at the time was but a young lad. The third was Rabbi Shemar ben Elchanan. As for the fourth, I do not know his name. Again, I'm reading from Ibn Daud's account of the story. And he continues, the commander wanted to violate Ramosha's wife, inasmuch as she was exceedingly beautiful. Thereupon she cried out in Hebrew to her husband, Rabbi Moshe, and asked him whether or not those who drown in the sea will be quickened at the time of the resurrection of the dead. He replied unto her, the Lord said, I will bring them back from Bashan, I will bring them back from the depths of the sea. Having heard his reply, she cast herself into the sea and drowned. So just to take a pause for a moment from this account, this seems to be very much like a famous story in the Gemara and Gittin. The Gemara and Gittin tells us that Maise Bedalad Meil Siyaladim Vilada Shnishbu Likalon. There is a story of 400 young boys and girls who were taken captive in order to be violated. And Hirgishu Batzim Lomahema Bisbakshim, and they finally realized why they were being taken. And Amruim Anu Tovim Bayam Anu Barmil Chayelum Haba, if we drown in the sea, will we merit a world to come? And Darash Lahem Agadol Shabahem, the greatest one among these 400 children, expounded Amar Hashem Yibashan Ashiv Ashim Mitzulos Yan. So he cites this pasuk that Hashem will return them from the Hashem will bring them back from Basham. He will bring them back from the depths of the sea. Elu shetovim bayam. So this Mitzulos Yan refers to those who drown in the sea. And the Gemara says that the girls and the boys then jumped in and committed suicide rather than submit to this horrific sin. And it seems that this story with the wife of Rav Moshe is sort of taken from this story from the Gemara and Gittin. Now, the account of the story continues, of the account of Ibn Daud continues with the following. These sages did not tell a soul about themselves or their wisdom. The commander sold Rabbi Shemariah in Alexandria of Egypt. Rav Shemariah proceeded to Fostat, where he became head of the academy. Then he sold Rabbi Chushil on the coast of Ifriqiya. From there, the latter proceeded to the city of Kairouan, which at that time was the mightiest of all Muslim cities in the land of the Maghreb, where he became the head of the academy and where he begot his son, Rabbeinu Hananel. So let's take a break from the account for a second. So now we're saying that each of these sages were sent to these major centers or future centers of Torah learning in the Sephardic communities. We have Rav Shamari going to Egypt. Egypt became a major Jewish center during this time, 10th century. And Rabbi Hushiel goes to Kairouan, North Africa, another major center. And the final one, of course, is Spain. And we continue with the account. Then the commander arrived at Cordova, where he sold Moshe along with Rabbi Chanoch. He was redeemed by the people of Cordova, who were under the impression that he was a man of no education. In other words, the people didn't know that he was a Gadol Batorah. Let's continue the reading the account. Now there was in Cordova a synagogue that was called the College Synagogue, where a judge by the name of Rabbi Nathan the Pious, who was a man of distinction, used to preside. However, the people of Spain were not thoroughly versed in the words of our rabbis of blessed memory. Nevertheless, with the little knowledge that they did possess, they conducted a school and interpreted the traditions more or less accurately. Once Rabbi Nathan explained the law requiring immersion of the finger for each sprinkling, which is found in the tractate Yoma, but he was unable to explain it correctly. Thereupon, Rabbi Moshe was seated in the corner like an attendant, arose before Rabbi Nathan, said to him, "Rabbi, this would result in an excess of immersion." So what's going on here? What's going on here is Rabbi Natan, or Rabbi Nathan, was explaining the halachos of Tevila, of the Kohen Gadol who was immersing on Yom Kippur. And he said before each of the sprinkling, the hazos, that the Kohen Gadol did, he would go to the mikvah. And Rabbi Moshe said that can't be true, because he did a lot of sprinklings. He sprinkled a number of times in the Kodesh Kodashim, then on the Parochos, then on the Mizbeach Hazav. And if he did it each time, that would be more than what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said the Kohen Gadol only immerses, goes to the mikvah five times during Yom Kippur. So Rabbi Moshe, who was an unknown at the time, corrects Rabbi Nasan. So the account continues. When he and the students heard his words, they marveled to each other and asked him to explain the law to them. This he did quite properly. Then each of them asked him all the difficulties which they had, and he replied to them out of the abundance of his wisdom. Outside the college, there were litigants who were not permitted to enter until the students completed their lesson. On that day, Rabbi Nathan, or Rabbi Nassim, the judge, walked down, and the litigants went after him. However, he said to them, "I shall no longer be judge. This man who is garbed in rags and is a stranger is my master, and I shall be his disciple from this day on. You ought to appoint him judge of the community of Cordova." And that is exactly what they did. Let's take a break for a minute again and say, what does this story remind you of? Story reminds us of the Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Samach Vav Min Aleph, where the Gemara tells us that there was halacha, that halacha zunis amim b'nei b'seira, that b'nei b'seira did not know a particular halacha. What was halacha? Pabachas chol arba'asar lios b'shabbos. It's one time that the 14th of Nisan fell on Shabbos. Shachu v'lo yadu in Pesach dochas the Shabbos im lav. And they didn't know if the Korban Pesach overrode the Shabbos prohibitions. Could you sacrifice a Korban Pesach on Shabbos? And Amro klumi yesh adam shiodeim in Pesach dochas the Shabbos im lav. Does anyone know if Pesach overrides the Shabbos or not? And the Gemara goes on to say that there is someone who came from Bavel. His name is Hillel. And the Gemara goes on to say that Hillel is able to convince them that the Korban Pesach is Docha Shabbos, override Shabbos, and the Gemara concludes and says, Miyad Hoshivuhu Merosho, Merosho Minuhu Nasi Alehem, Vayadorish Kolyam Kula Bechos Pesach. Immediately after he is able to explain to them why Korban Pesach overrides Shabbos, they appoint him as their leader over B'nai B'Seira. He becomes their Nasi, similar to what happens here with the Spanish community. This is how they treat Rav Moshe ben Chanoch. The account continues. The community then assigned him a large stipend and honored him with costly garments and a carriage. At that point, the commander wished to retract his sale. You can imagine why the commander wishes to retract his sale, of course, because he wants more money. This is why, by the way, these sages, Rav Shamari and Rav Hushiel and Rabbi Moshe ben Chanoch, did not say that they were rabbis, because then the Jewish community, which ransomed them, they would have been charged a lot more money. The commander finds out, he discovers that Rabbi Moshe was a great scholar, so he charged a small amount, a relatively small amount, to the Jewish community for this person. Now he wants to charge more. However, the account continues, the king would not permit him to do so, for he was delighted by the fact that the Jews of his domain no longer had need of the people of Babylonia. In other words, the caliph, the Spanish leader, realizes this is a good thing for the Spanish Jews to have a rabbi, a leader of this caliber in his community. And because if you have a spiritual leader, that means they're not going to turn to the yeshivos in Bavel anymore for spiritual guidance. That means they're going to send less money. They're going to keep their money in spade. That's what the caliph, the Spanish caliph, wants. In any case, the report of all this spread throughout all of Spain and the Maghreb, and students came to study under him, under Rab Moshe. Moreover, all questions which had formerly been addressed to the academies were now directed to him. The affair occurred in the days of Rav Shrira in about 4750, somewhat more or less. 4750 in Hebrew, the Hebrew calendar, that's around 990. So this, of course, led to the break, or the breach between the Jewish community in Spain, North Africa, and Egypt, with between this those communities and the community in Bavel. They don't need the yeshivas in Bavel anymore. They have their own spiritual leaders. They broke away. And this is the reason, because you had these great rabbis becoming leaders in Egypt, North Africa, and Spain. This is the account of the four captives, the story of the four captives, written by Ibn Daud. This event explains how around the year 1000, the centers of Torah scholarship dramatically moved from the disintegrating communities of Bavel and transferred to North Africa, Europe, and particularly Spain. And again, as I mentioned, the date given here is 4750, which is the year 990. Now the question is whether this story is historically accurate, or is it a pious legend, perhaps based on a grain of truth? So the first issue that that we have to deal with is the fact that the date of the event is 4750, which is 990, and Abd al-Rahman died in 961, and he, according to this account, he was alive at this time. Additionally, Rav Shura Gaon did not become the Gaon until 968, 7 years after the death of Abd al-Rahman, and again, this story, as it's recorded, apparently happened during both of their lives. So there was a question as to the authenticity of this account. Additionally, in 1899, Solomon Schechter found a letter in the Cairo Geniza from Rav Chushil to Rav Shemaria Ben Elchanan. And this letter demonstrated that Rav Chushil had come to Kairouan quite willingly in connection with a trip that originally was to take him to Cairo. And there is no suggestion in the letter of any mishap, such as the capture by pirates. In this letter, Rav Chushil writes that he prolonged his stay in Kairouan only to await the arrival of his son Elchanan and in response to the request of the Jewish community there. Because of these objections, many modern scholars have asserted that this may have not been historically accurate. However, some scholars have resolutely continued to defend the basic authenticity of the story. Now, it could also be that certain parts of the story were true. For example, there is independent evidence that Rav Moshe and Rabbi Chanoch did come to Spain as captives, and after their release, rose to the religious leadership of the community of Cordova. Perhaps there were even four rabbinic leaders who were captured together and later ransomed to Jews of different communities. Maybe Ibn Daud converted a series of historical incidents and created a story from these different incidents for a greater purpose. Maybe the incidents are historically accurate, but some of the dates in certain stories should be ignored. In other words, you don't have to argue that it's all true or all false. It could be that he wove together a bunch of separate incidents to create a story, and maybe again some pieces, some details are inaccurate. Now, there are some theories, if that's the case, if Ibn Daud consciously, intentionally wrote a story that was inaccurate, there were some theories as to why he did that. Why would he write a story as he did if it's not accurate? So I'd like to suggest, or I just want to share with you, one theory. This theory was written by Gerson Cohen. He was a Jewish historian who passed away 30 years ago. He wrote an article about this topic, and one of his theories is that in reality, the Gaonim of Bavel were not happy with the independence of Spain, North Africa, Egypt, and Eretz Yisrael from their leadership, but they could do nothing. The yeshivos of Bavel declined steadily, while Spanish Jewry progressively were able to stand on their own two feet, on its own two feet. But the tension between the Spanish community and the Babylonian community continued for centuries. And Ibn Daud may have not wanted to publicize this tension between different rabbinic communities because at that time, the Karaite community was a significant force, and they would have been delighted to read all about this rabbinic dissension between the rabbis in Bavel and the rabbis in Spain. So Ibn Daud creates a story to explain how this new Sephardic community started. It could be that Ibn Daud felt that this fable was a means to a higher end, to promote good conduct. And historical facts may have not been, there is good conduct, meaning what? To support the Spanish Jewish community, North African Jewish community, the Egyptian Jewish community. And historical facts may have not been as significant to him as they might be to a modern student. He may have wanted to justify the relatively new rabbinic power in Sfarad, not more than 200 years old. So he shaped his story to fulfill this goal. And this story, of course, is the story of the four captives.